Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-hosts, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. My name is Scott, along here with my co-host, Kevin Hogan. It is Thursday, March 10th, and we have a fantastic show for you guys today. It's just jam-packed with amazing guests, so we're going to get right to it. I'm going to have my co-host, Kevin, here introduce our very first guest. Kevin, go.
It gives me great pleasure to introduce to our audience tonight, Julia Canfield, a personal friend of mine. She has her master's in public health from Boston University. She's a certified health education specialist. She serves on the board with me at the Bisexual Resource Center in Boston. She's on the Bisexual Leadership Roundtable. We went to Washington in 2015. I'm a huge fan of what she does, but tonight I asked her here in this month of March for a really for our audience to understand what this great movement is, the Bisexual Health Awareness Month in its third year. And I have to brag a second before I bring Julia in. Back when she was, I believe it was during her internship, she even won a Student Excellence in Public Health Practice Award for this. That was, I saw this idea start, and I saw it start with her, and this is absolutely one of those things that is so positive from our community that I wanted everyone in the rainbow community and beyond to hear from my friend Julia. Go ahead, Julia. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well, Kevin. Scott, how are you both?
Doing great. We're so honored to have you on. And then when you told me about your project that started back on March 1st, it's like, man, I wish we could have got it quicker, but I'm so glad we have you in now.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for having me on. And congratulations, too, on this great program. And Kevin's just a wonderful guy, so I'm really happy for him.
I'm blushing for all of our radio listeners. That actually makes me blush. But go ahead, Julia. I really want our listeners to hear about this program. And again, take it away in this sense, because this is the founder we have right here, everyone. I want you to hear about this because it's such an important thing during this month. It's even though we're in the second week now, it is not too late to go and take a look at all the stuff that's going on for our entire rainbow community, and especially for my bisexual brothers and sisters. So go ahead, Julia, tell us about this movement.
Sure. It is a Bisexual Health Awareness Month. It is a social media campaign that works to raise awareness about bisexual health disparities and promotes resources and actions that can work to address or decrease these disparities. And it happens every year in March. We're in the second week of this campaign for the third year this year. And we've been focusing this month on the needs of bisexual plus youth. And we're talking a lot about the needs of bisexual, pansexual, queer, fluid, no-label youth who have a lot of really unique challenges and disparities compared to their gay and straight peers through experiences of biphobia and bisexual erasure that really have an impact on their mental health, sexual health, rates of bullying and interpersonal violence. So we're really working this year to raise awareness about these issues and to try to discuss and promote ways that can improve their health at home or in school and within their communities.
That is so wonderful. Hey, did you just see, I just saw it come in the other day. I could be misquoting, but I think I'm close on this. Bisexual youth are 2 to 3 times more likely not to graduate from high school, I believe, than their gay, lesbian, and straight other students. I'm not exactly sure how the average was taken. I don't know if you saw that. But again, almost on every level, youth that identify as bisexual have it in some way more difficult when it comes to health. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I did see that study, and we see in the bi community, particularly with youth, is that they're not graduating from high school and they're not going on to college. And this sort of lack of educational attainment really impacts their health, and that,
right.
You know, and I think in our country too, in order to get, you know, really good health care, we need employers. And employers provide those added benefits of health care insurance, time off, paid leave, with bi youth in particular, not graduating from high school, not having those sort of educational opportunities, those employment opportunities, that can have a really huge impact on their health as they go forward in life. So that's a really great point, Kevin. Thank you for bringing that up.
And I'm going to be really rude. You're used to this for those of our listeners. I'm going to be Irish here, interrupt, and say this is the absolute opposite that you're listening to when it comes to breaking down stigma, to challenging stigma. Julia is one of the most intelligent, bi-identified women I've ever met. She has, as I've already said, has her master's from BU. She's using what she knows to help others. She's reaching back out to our community, and that's the precisely the reason, again, why I think this, I love looking at it throughout the month. So again, I know Scott will remind, and I know you may have other questions there, Scott, sorry to interrupt, but please make sure by the end of this that everyone has has ways to reach out and see what they can do, because I know this month-long campaign goes on a social media cycle all the time, and I look forward to it. I literally look forward to March, as I can say this, as much for St. Patrick's Day now as I do for BHAM.
Well, thank you. And
and do we call it BHAM, or am I wrong? There. Do we call it BHAM? All right, we're christening it tonight. We're christening it tonight. It's in its third year, so we can get an acronym now. All right. So BHAM.
We usually call it BAM.
Oh, BAM. Okay. Okay. I like that too. Yeah. I like that too. That's excellent. BAM.
All right.
Okay. According to the founder, it's here tonight. BAM.
Yeah, since we're talking about health, ham might not be the best thing. Maybe fish or beef fish is on the I think BAM is much better overall.
I know. The carnivore in me comes out every time. I apologize to all of our vegan listeners. I apologize.
Hey, what I wanted to talk to you about for a second, if we could, Julia, I read, when Kevin told me you were going to be on, kind of tried to do a little research, and you wrote a fantastic guest blog last year, I believe it was last year, on the weight of bisexuality. And that's one of the things we're going to be discussing with our next guest, Dr. Bowman, about talking about obesity and health risk. And there was just some fascinating statistics that I saw you put in. 25% of bisexuals receive food stamps as compared to 14% of lesbian and gay men. Bisexual women have higher BMI levels. And you even had some recommendations for what bisexual adults need as far as exercise. Can you talk about the article? Because I thought it was just fascinating.
Sure. Yeah, we did that a couple years ago for the first campaign. Really, the big issues, I think, in the bi community is around what you just discussed in terms of higher BMIs, food stamps, in particular, getting enough exercise or eating healthier, decreasing stress. I think, too, there's a lot of those personal sort of health behaviors that are really important. I would say, too, that a big part of that piece as well was issues of addressing food insecurity. We mentioned earlier about educational attainment and how that can lead to poverty. And
yes,
for a lot of individuals in poverty or in low-income situations, in places that have food deserts, where they don't have access to healthy foods or affordable healthy foods, that really ties into a lot of obesity and heart health issues in the community. And I would also say as well, you know, being able to have access to, you know, health care plans, health insurance, and a lot of those preventative care services that go along with it are all really important pieces to it as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, I live in actually Northeast Ohio in the Youngstown area, which is a very depressed region as it is, and it's very, one of the big things they're addressing now is they're trying to bring people downtown more and putting housing there, and that's where a big urban area is, and they're talking quite a bit about the food deserts and the trouble of the population having places to find good healthy alternatives within a walking distance or a bus distance, and having it causes that entire cycle of bad eating and bad health.
Yeah, it's a very critical systemic issue in a lot of communities.
Hey, Julia, before we let you go, I just want to ask one other thing here, because I think there's another component to this, and obviously you're so intelligent, so informed about this. Isn't there also a part to this about getting our healthcare professionals trained in a bisexual competency so that there's, again, I'm all about this program, Healing Stigma. And, you know, for me, I want I carry my bisexuality as a point of pride, as a point of, you know, an orientation that feels very good describing myself. you know, to anyone, but much of our community aren't, even if they do have a healthcare provider, they may not be out or have talked to their healthcare provider about it. And then beyond that, how many people in the profession need bisexual competency training? Is there any of that going on through this? Has that come up at all?
Yeah, we will definitely be focusing quite a bit on that in terms of cultural competency. I would say that the cultural competency in regards to bisexuality, transgender individuals, queer people of color are all very low. And I think, too, when you're a healthcare provider and you're seeing patients and clients in the community, I think understanding all of their intersectional issues. And right. What I'd also like to mention, too, as a piece of that is when we're talking about, you know, poverty and educational attainment, these are things that also impact bisexuals on an intersectional level, such as being a person of color or a transgender individual. These are all things that kind of intersect and impact health disparities. So I would say that it's a big focus this month in terms of cultural competency, clinical competency, educating healthcare providers about all the different intersectional issues that bisexual individuals experience. That's really a big part. And we'll be focusing on that a lot more next week into our third week, which is resources, and then our fourth week, which is action steps.
And for those that missed first week, Julia, can they still access what went on the first, and naturally what's going on this week? Could you just tell our audience?
Sure, yeah. We will be posting a lot of our tweets and posts that have gone out this week. We'll be putting them on our website, and that is bihealthmonth.org, so people can access a lot of these posts and these statistics throughout the month and beyond.
Brilliant.
Now, are you guys still part of the Bisexual Resource Center? I know they help you pilot that back when you started in 2014. Are you guys totally freestanding on your own now?
Oh, no, not at all. The Bisexual Health Awareness Month is a program of the Bisexual Resource Center, the BRC, and has been since it started. So when I started as an intern, as Kevin was describing earlier, that was actually a practicum project that I created for the BRC while I was doing my MPH at BU.
I watched her create this. It was amazing. Amazing. This woman is going places. My audience out there, you understand, we're going to have her back on again, Scott. This is only scratching the surface. She's brilliant. She's informed. When I went to Washington, I watched people listen to what this young woman had to say, and changes are going to be made because of people like this in our community.
Thank you so much. And it's really to the credit of the BRC for working on these issues and raising awareness about them. It's been a really great few years working on the project through the BRC. So it's definitely very much connected to the organization.
So if we have someone listening out there now and we know you're focusing on youth, and they have a son or daughter, they know a friend or a neighbor that can use this information, the best place to go is the website, or what is your recommendation? What's the first steps anyone should take into realizing what their health needs are and how to address them?
I would definitely recommend our website as a starting point, bihealthmonth.org. We'll have a lot of resources there. I would also say, too, that there's lots of other really great bi-specific organizations in the country. BiNet USA, who is a campaign partner this year, they do a lot of work with raising awareness about bisexuality and advocating for bisexual needs. And I would say, too, that in particular with bisexual youth, if anyone's interested, the Human Rights Campaign did a fantastic report a couple years ago about bi youth specifically. So I definitely recommend some of those sources of information if people are looking for bi-specific resources or bi-specific data or info. Those are all really great places to start.
Anything else we have, Kevin?
Like I said, I could go on and on all night when it comes to our bi community, when it comes to the things going on. I just am so blown away. This is just the third year, Julia. Could you just maybe say a little bit about any ideas about where you see it going in the future? Since, you know, it's getting bigger every year, right? Could you just describe, you know, maybe like a 5-year, what your dream would be?
In terms of my dream, I would love to see it continuing on over the next 5 years. I think there's many different health topics, many different health issues and related health issues going on in the bi community that we can focus on and build awareness about, continue to engage the community, issues of sexual health, sexual violence, intimate partner violence. physical health. We could even do something on bi elders, since we did something on bi youth. That's also a very critically underserved community. So I definitely think that can continue to grow and partner with different organizations. There's just a lot of room to expand upon and work on. So we're really excited about this year and many more years of the campaign to come.
Congratulations. And I am so, so thrilled to be able to say on Healing Stigma, on Left of Straight Radio, that this is a huge part of what both creates community, informs, and breaks down what would otherwise be, again, people that oftentimes are misunderstood, stereotyped, therefore carry around something inside that chips away at identity. Instead, this informs and gets people healthier and fuller in their identity. I'm so thankful for what you're doing, Julia, and I hope you will come back to the show again when we have other things that interest you that you'd like to speak about more.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. Thank you.
Oh, exactly. I'm so excited to have her on. This is just a great start to the show today. And Julia, we appreciate it. We're going to look forward to having you on the show. And thanks so much for being on Healing Stigma with Left of Straight Radio.
Oh, great. Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Thanks.
Wow. What a fantastic guest you brought on the show, Kevin.
Well, I like I said, that is truly an informed young woman who is going places, is a brilliant member of the bisexual community, and I just think is a role model for others. So oftentimes, that's so important, is to have role models. Julia Canfield is one of them.
And she did that as an intern project for the Bisexual Research Center. Kind of explain to our listeners that's a great resource that you have that a lot in Boston, a lot of people don't have. Why don't you talk about that for just a second?
Sure. Well, the Bisexual Resource Center in Boston is actually it's a national organization as well. It just happens to be the oldest national organization in the U.S., first one, specifically for raising bisexual awareness and for informing bisexual people. As Julia said, there's many others now, excellent ones, like Binet USA, but the BRC, as we call it, I now serve on the board and was on the board back when Julia was a student intern that came to us from Boston University. Again, being in Boston has such an incredible group of informed, educated people due to the universities here. It's really wonderful. And yet at the same time, we fight things all the time, such as, the opioid crisis that goes on here, raging up and down the East Coast is such a hard part, and the stigmatization that goes along with it for families and, victims of addiction. So when it has, as she said, when it has that cross intersectionality with bisexuality, then we find out oftentimes how much our community suffers, but only if, the statistics as that word, our middle word there, resource, the Bisexual Resource Center, and others do, we really work to make sure that the right information is out there, that those that are in need, those that are questioning, those that aren't sure and want good information, that there's always, as well as organizations that want that, cultural competency, there's a way for them to reach out and do that. But back when Julia was a student intern, she came up with this whole idea of the Bisexual Health Awareness Month. And as I said, for 3 years running, has just taken this thing and run with it from different directions that really need addressing. And, she did it. She saw the need, and she understands social media. She understands the community. She's well-spoken, and I'm honored to call her a friend. And can I also just say to our readers out there, we didn't bring this up, but our readers, our listeners out there, that Julia is one of the first readers of my poetry. She's that kind of trusted friend. I asked her before I even had a publisher. Julia was one of the first people to read the entire collection of poetry before I sent it off and got a publisher. That's how much I trust her opinion as a young woman.
That is awesome. Well, I can't wait to have her back, but now we got to get everyone ready for Dr. Johnny Bowden. I'm so excited to have him on. He should be calling in any second now. So what we're going to do is go ahead to a quick song. We're going to use our good friend John Williams, a good friend of mine from UBN Radio. Play a little Get Here When You Can, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments with the fantastic Dr. Johnny Bowden.
You can reach me by caravan. comfortable than I can ever make. I don't care how I get here, just get here to change. You can reach me by sailboats, and I'm a tree of sweet rose. Take the sled and slide down the slope into these arms of mine. Cross the border in a blaze of gold. I don't care how you get here, just get here if you can. There are hills and mountains, sweeter. Oh, it's more than get over. If I have my way, surely.
Terrific. John Williams, very good friend of the show, with his live, unedited version of Get Here When You Can. Hey, Kevin and I are so excited to have our next guest. He's a nationally known expert on weight loss, nutrition, and health, also known as the Nutrition Mythbuster. He's a board-certified nutritionist with a master's degree in psychology and the author of 14 books on health, healing, food, and longevity, including 3 bestsellers. He's appeared as a guest on numerous radio and television and a contributor to dozens of publications. We're so excited to have him take some time from his very busy schedule to be with us today. Please welcome Dr. Johnny Bowden. Johnny, how are you?
I'm great, and thank you so much for having me and for bringing me on with the most amazing rendition of Get Here that I have ever heard in my life. I'm very honored by that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's a good friend of our show, John. We love having John do an introduction to a lot of our guests. We're so glad to have you on. Kevin has talked to me about you ever since we started this show 4 weeks ago now, and we're excited to have you on, my friend.
Well, I'm very excited to be here, and Kevin is a dear friend, and I think what you're doing is just amazing and great, and anything that I can contribute to it, and I'm honored that you invited me on so early in what's going to clearly be a hit show and have millions of listeners, and so I'm very, very excited about being one of the first, you know, half dozen guests. So thank you very much.
Well, it's not an accident, Johnny. This is Kevin here, and it's not an accident, my dear friend. And I'm going to say to our listeners out there, you have to understand that Johnny is a dear friend for me, is one of those people that I go back a long way in terms of eating for me and what I went through and staying healthy at times for me was the difference between do or die. And I have to say that I am not only saying this as someone who's a friend of Johnny's, but as someone who's sitting here surrounded by his books. I love how this man writes about it. I love how he speaks about it. His website is amazing for Smart Fat. We'll get to that in a second. But, Johnny, the reason why you're here, I just wanted to let you know also, is we just had our first guest on. We had this new movement from the bisexual community called the Bisexual Health Awareness Month, in which we spoke about some of the health disparities. And naturally, this goes wider into the rainbow community and beyond. But oftentimes, I just happen to find that the first thing we often miss in terms of this society that we're bombarded, say, with medicine commercials, is the food we eat. And I was just wondering if you could talk, for our listeners who've never heard you before, this love affair, this passion, this myth-busting you have, and maybe where it comes from when it comes to nutrition, because I'm sold on it, you know that. Go ahead and tell our listeners about it.
Well, I'll tell you the executive summary first, and then I'll tell you how
yeah.
I got there. The executive summary is that 90% of everything you've heard about what healthy eating looks like is just a crock. It's not supported by science. It's not supported. It's not supported by anything. And it is. And when you see that, it's like pulling back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz, and you never quite look at authorities in quite the same way, particularly health authorities, particularly doctors, dietitians, and the like. So I want to tell you how I got there, because otherwise it can sound a little bit like, well, what's this quack talking about? Everything we've been told is wrong, you know, cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease, and you should eat a lot of fat, and carbohydrates are bad, and soy's not a health food. You know, come on, what is he saying? So let me kind of take you through, if you'll indulge me, 10 seconds of like how I got here. So I was a drug-addicted musician, working quite successfully, I might add, in music and jazz and ultimately in Broadway shows, touring the country, doing stuff like that. But I was wildly unhealthy. I smoked. I came out of the Woodstock era, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I thought a healthy breakfast was coffee and a cigarette and an aspirin. I mean, I was everything you would think, you know, a musician on the road would be, you know? And by any, you know, if there were any justice in the world, and if it hadn't been for the discoveries I'm going to share with you, I'd probably look like David Crosby, if I even were alive, or Keith Richards. At some point, I think around the late 80s, I'm doing these cockamamie tours in these little podunk towns, and, you know, there's not much to do. And the actors, you know, we have the days free, and the actors are all in good shape because that's their job. That's what they do. And I'm kind of bored. And I said to one of them, hey, what, teach me how to lift those weights. How do you do even that? You know, maybe I could, maybe I'll try to get in shape. You know, that's one of those things you always think about, but you never really find the time to do. That was like me. And I started kind of experimenting with some of this stuff. And I was not, Kevin, I was not one of those guys who had, you know, an epiphany and they changed their lives overnight. I was one of those guys who went to the gym, did a set of bench presses, and then went out and smoked a cigarette in between sets. So it took me a while to really, you know, to kind of have this transformation. But I noticed such a difference in my energy.
Yeah.
My waistline, I didn't have any pictures of me from back in that era, but I looked like I would be my father now. And when I began to discover what this stuff could do, I got a very obsessive guy, you know, so right away I really got into it, and I'd read everything I could read about it, but the only information we really had at the time is what I now affectionately call Muscle and Fiction magazine. I mean, just absolute nonsense stuff in the bodybuilding magazines about, you know, if you're not enough protein, you too can look like a barn door. I mean, it just utter nonsense. And I was an academically oriented, nerdy, middle-class Jewish kid in New York. And, you know, the first thing I thought about when, you know, this is the first physical exercise I've ever done in my life, the first time I paid attention to things like nutrition, first thing I thought about is, I wonder if I can get a degree in this. There must be some way you can get a degree in this. And I figured it would look really good on the Broadway playbill, you know, when they read the bio. And I figured it would really help me get girls. I thought, wow, how cool if the conductor, and you read the bio of the conductor, and they mention, oh, and by the way, he's a certified aerobics instructor, a certified personal trainer. I thought that would be very sexy. So that was my main motivation for doing this. I go and I pick up a certification, and I got bitten by the bug. I got just energized by this. I loved it. I picked up a second certification and a third. Ultimately, I got six of them. And one day, It's 1990. I happen to I'm doing a show in New York City, and I pass this big banner, and it says this new trendy gym is opening. It looks really cool. It's called Equinox, and they're hiring. And there's a little office upstairs from this one gym. It's the only gym that it's first Equinox that ever opened in New York
back
City.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. And I go up, and I don't know how, but they hired me. So I start as a floor trainer on Equinox while I'm conducting at night. It was just heaven for me. I just loved it. I think I was better at it than I was at music. But, Kevin, I bought lock, stock, and barrel, the crap we were being taught. I believed in low-fat diets. They told us, you want to get fat, eat a lot of fat. You want to lose weight, go on a low-fat diet. Exercise more. They had a victim narrative about obesity that is still in existence today. And there are so many...
the Susan Powder way of losing weight.
Yeah, well, how many people walk around literally having bought into the mythology that if they are overweight, it is clearly because they are slovenly and slothy and
and this is the stigma.
And they eat too many calories. What?
Yep, this is where I get rude and I interrupt. This is the reason. This is stigma. This is weight stigma we're talking about. Another part of it. This is the Healing Stigma program where we try to address it from so many different angles. How it is being addressed, please, and Johnny, you can start from again on that, please, but what he's saying is what society puts upon you. That is a stigma. That's not the case, and that's why we have Johnny on here and why I'm going to shut up and let him speak more. Go ahead, Johnny.
But Kevin, it's even worse than that because it's one thing to be stigmatized for overweight and said, okay, you know, we don't value you as much as we do, you know, whatever, quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, normal weight people are, but we know how you got there. You know, you chose not to exercise. You chose to eat too many calories. That's one kind of stigma. It's worse when you tell them what you think they need to do to change, and it's BS. It's not true. So you've got these people who actually buy that, oh, yeah, I'm fat because I just eat too many calories, and I guess I'm too lazy to exercise. Well, you know what? That might be true for some people, but it's not true for a lot of other people who have done everything we told them. And it didn't work, and it didn't work not because they didn't do it, but because the advice we gave them has been wrong. And let me tell you how I came to this.
Yeah.
So it's 1990, and I'm totally buying the low-fat thing. I'm totally buying that it's all about calories, calories in, calories out. That's what, you know, that's the weight loss equation. And I'm totally buying that it's all about exercise. And if you just exercise enough, you'd be thin, and I'm buying all of it. Except some of our clients weren't buying it, and it wasn't working. And against our advice, they'd go on the Atkins diet. And would flip out. We'd go, dude, you can't do this. This guy should be medical malpractice. He's telling people to eat fat and bacon. You're going to get a heart attack. Maybe you'd lose a pound or two, maybe, but will it be worth it? Your cholesterol is going to go through the roof and you're going to die. We knew this to be true, just the way everybody knows how Muslims are, or how bisexuals are, or how, you know, sex workers are. We know that we have these truths. They're in our head. We can't. They're impervious to evidence. And we knew that the Atkins diet was going to kill you. So our clients would go on this because remember they're frustrated. This low fat thing's not working. Nothing's going on. Atkins was getting back in the news in 1991, and they're trying it. Except they came back, and none of that happened. They lost some belly fat. They looked better, they felt better, their blood lipid tests had improved, their triglycerides had dropped, their blood pressure was lower. They didn't die. And this presents what psychologists call cognitive dissonance. You have now two ideas that you believe to be true, but they both can't be true. For example, you can believe that low-fat diets are wonderful and healthy and cause weight loss, and that, you know, high-fat diets cause heart attacks, and then you can have, here are these people, Mr. Jones and Mrs. Jones, who went on high-fat diets and all of their cardiovascular risks improved. Both these statements can't be true. So you have to reconcile them. That's what cognitive dissonance is. Two incompatible ideas. So I started questioning. Well, if these guys aren't dying, they're doing so well on these diets that are supposed to be killing them, could there be something we weren't taught? And then we had the luck, and this is one of just those confluence of things that happen that kind of changes a person's direction in life. Barry Sears, who many of your listeners may know as the author and inventor of the Zone Diet, one of the most successful and important dietary trends in the last 20 years. And he had just published the first of the Zone books. He wasn't terribly well known. He came to Equinox to give a lecture. And he lectured to the trainers, and he explained that we were quite missing the boat on this whole calorie thing, and that what was really important for weight gain and weight loss were hormones. Hormones ran the show, and different kinds of foods had different kinds of effects on different kinds of hormones. For example, your fat storage hormone, insulin, it reacts very differently to a meal of carbohydrates versus to a meal of protein and fat. So after this lecture, which was startling at the time, nobody was thinking this way. Maybe some people who are listening today say, oh, well, we know that. You know that because Barry Sears talked about it in 1990, and people finally started to trickle down to the... But what happened was, I went up to him afterwards, and I said, Dr. Sears, if what you say is true, sir, then everybody else has got to be wrong. And he looked at me with tremendous quiet confidence, and he said, that's exactly right. And he became a good mentor. He actually wrote the introduction to my first book. So this is where I started questioning authority, if you will. And I went back to school, and I, you know, first got a certified nutritionist diploma. Then I had already had my master's in psychology, which served me very well in the personal training and nutrition counseling business. And then I ultimately got my PhD and got board certified by the American College of Nutrition. And I've been fighting the good fight to get these myths out of our lexicon for about, you know, the last 25 years.
You know, I'm going to jump in here because I have to. It sounds like a commercial, but it's not. I have given personally to friends of mine the great cholesterol myth, just so you know. And I know I may have mentioned this to you before, John, but I have given it to people, and it has changed. And these are people that are not scientists. These are people that are not, you know, they're bombarded sometimes, as you said, with this dissonance of different problems that they hear. And I have given this book to friends of mine, and it has changed their lives. But more importantly is the fact that it reads like a whodunit. It's so interesting. I keep turning the pages. So this is the thing. Each one of these that I have, and you know, I also want to say that my wife and I are so thankful because naturally, and I think Johnny knows this, I've mentioned it before, my wife has a number of allergies, and we go to the Healthiest Meals on Earth book, we go to the, what is it, the 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, and the meals are so good, and I have to jump all this in together and say that, so I love how you put it together, I love the stories that you tell, and I'm just now starting Smart Fat, you know, as I say to this, when you go through all of these different things, Johnny, and you do, and you're self-taught, and you discover this, how frustrating is it? How hard is it? Could you see any of those challenges along the way? There must be pushback when you know you're right, and the rest of, almost, if I'm right in saying it, an industry doesn't necessarily want to know. Am I right?
Yeah, you're 90% right. I would add a 10% corrective to that and move it a little bit to the left. I often say, and I do workshops and seminars and stuff, and speaking things all over the country, and one of the first things I always tell people is don't believe any girl, including me. Anybody who tells you at this point in time that they know the whole story of obesity or even of the human body and metabolism and all of the individual factors that can affect that, anybody who tells you they have the solution and the answer at this point in time is either a lying or a charlatan. So I always tell people that one of my favorite books in graduate school was a book called If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him. And the title kind of tells you all. You don't even need to read the book. You just need to know what the title is, because the title is basically Don't Follow Gurus. And that means me too. What I hope, and that's the 10% thing, what I hope is that if I have any message at all to your audience, to any audience, it's about empowering yourself to be the leader of your own health team. Listen to me. I hope I have good information that will maybe pull you, as we used to say in the old music days, pull your coat, or at least get you to you know, investigate a little bit something that you hadn't seen before, and investigate that, get some more opinions on it, listen to some summits, do some interviews, and empower yourself with that knowledge, and then make work with doctors, of course, if they know what they're doing, or health professionals and nutritionists, but for goodness sake, only you know your body. You live in it.
Right.
And we have lost the ability, and this goes into your territory as well. We've lost the ability to trust, you know, the information that we get from our own bodies and our own minds. And I'm not saying that everybody should just follow whatever they think, because then we have anarchy and chaos, and a lot of people are probably having some delusional thoughts about it. But most of us have a really good sense of things that we don't trust.
You know? Well, you know, here's the thing for me. here's the thing for me, Johnny, and I think you remember this. When we first met, we first started talking, I had recently lived in Europe for a long time.
Yes.
And I had moved back. I had moved back to America, and I was having skin problems. I was feeling really just lethargic, and I met Johnny, and we started talking. And also, people have to understand this. I was very fortunate to be able to be an athlete to get through college. I didn't have the money to do it otherwise. So, I mean, literally, by being a scholarship athlete, I was lucky to have to train all the time. But later, when I came back, I was eating meat that was hormone-ridden or what. I talked to Johnny. I changed
most
my diet. And literally, I didn't know it from, you know, oftentimes having a different form of a, you know, I didn't realize I was eating organic in Europe, and I was, basically.
Yeah.
I came back, and Johnny changed my life. And then when everything else happened later for me, it was by being able to remain healthy, eat healthy, that I do feel that it was part of, as you just said so brilliantly, Johnny, it was part of my team. My health team was on my side, and that gave me more energy to be able to fight the good fight for all the other work that is also regaining your identity. If you're feeling stigmatized. And it all just came clear to me right now. And thank you, man. Thank you so much that I met you when I did.
Please.
Because
I was
really confused. I didn't know. I thought I was having good meat, and I wasn't. Maybe you could explain that.
Thank you, and I will. But I want to touch on something you just mentioned with the stigma thing. Well, you know, stigma is a form of one of many sources of enormous stress that we all have in our lives. And stress is something I have studied a lot or written a lot about in my book on aging and my book on heart disease, The Great Cholesterol Myth. We know now that stress is not, if anybody in this audience is listening, thinking back to the days when they used to say, oh, stress, you're all stressed out, you know, well, I'll sleep when I'm dead, you know, the kind of A person, you know, the type A personality types that just ignore. Stress is a real physiological thing with serious hormonal consequences. Certain hormones get released when they're up and elevated beyond what they were expected or intended to do. They have dire consequences for the body. They can make any disease worse. They can bring on attacks of certain diseases. Just think of herpes, for example. I mean, can be, it's not created by stress, but it's brought on by stress. And much like that, stress can compound any illness. In some cases, it can actually cause an outbreak. In many cases, it can make recovery very, very slow, if not impossible. It adds belly fat. It shrinks an area of the brain called the hippocampus, which has to do with thinking and memory. So stress, and stigma being a huge form of that, has serious physiological consequences. And one of the nasty jokes in life is that the more stressed you are, the less likely you are to actually take care of yourself in a way that will mitigate that stress. So it becomes a downward spiral. It's kind of like with depression, you know. You can't, well, depressed people, just get out and go to the gym, you'll be fine. They can't get off the couch. You understand?
Yeah.
You know, and
well,
that's
you know, Johnny, you know, one of the funny, not funny, I'm sorry, but definitely wrong word, funny and strange, ironic, one of the worst things about stigma is the fact that oftentimes when people are stigmatized, whether individuals or groups, one of the things that happens is there is a moment when people can fall into being the stigma. And what you were saying is absolutely truthful. Because of the stress, if you're losing family, so many of our, you know, this, so many of our listeners understand this from the Rainbow community. Rainbow youth, or let's put the homeless youth in America, I think nearly half of them have to do with an LGBT related issue. So you're homeless, and then, you know, in terms of food and everything else, these things become secondary. But even later, as you hopefully work towards finding a better life, you know, this still is something that is overlooked, let's say. And the thing for me in it that I just realized, and when you're talking about the stress factor here, is there, how can I say this? Isn't there also something in comfort food must feed that almost like a nasty addiction? Instead of getting what you need to reduce that stress, the sugars, because I look around and I see how sugar, you know, is everywhere. You know, these other things, they must, do they do something in the brain that kind of tricks it into thinking that it's comforted and it's actually doing something that's obviously bad for the physiology?
Well, there's two tracks to answering that question. So the first is psychological. You know, a lot of what makes foods comfort foods is their associations. You know, if you got applesauce mm-hmm. and chocolate grain cookies when you were a kid, and that was a time when things were idyllic and maybe it was even associated with mother's love because she would buy the cookies on the way home, whatever the association is, that's going to have a very powerful effect in the brain in terms of actually releasing certain neurotransmitters and actually making you feel better. It is almost like self-medication. But then there's the second track, and this is really insidious and disgusting and true. And it's been investigated by a Pulitzer Prize-winning author who wrote mm-hmm. the fantastic book Salt, Sugar, and Fat, and also by a former FDA commissioner, David Kessler, who wrote a book called The End of Overeating. And in both these books, they examine exactly how the food industry literally engineers these foods, what you're calling comfort foods and most likely snack right. foods and things. They literally engineer them to be addictive. And here's how they do it. They hire PhD food scientists who work in laboratories, mostly in New Jersey, to come up with the perfect flavor combinations, the perfect colors, the perfect textures. And they look for something called, and this has all been documented, this is not my crazy ramblings, it's all in this book, Pulitzer Prize-winning investigation.
Yeah.
And it's not really denied very much in the nutrition community. They literally try to find something that they call the bliss point. The bliss point is, if you're old enough to remember the commercial, bet you can't eat just one, that's the bliss point, the point where you can't just eat just one.
Eat one.
And they are engineered to do this. They literally know what neurotransmitters fire, what, you know, taste combinations are going to make your dopamine go off most. And literally, these foods become addicted. There are studies done at Princeton on rats and sugar where they actually test which is more addictive. And they can measure this by seeing what kind of challenge is a rat willing to go to press a button to get this substance. You know, will they stand on an electric hot plate? Will they run across, you know, swim through cold water?
Yeah.
And what they find is they are more addicted to sugar than they are to cocaine.
I was going to say, it sounded like an academic meth lab the way you were describing it. Oh my God!
Right? But yeah, they will go through more and show more withdrawal and all the little rat withdrawal symptoms from shaking and, you know, antisocial behavior. This will be triggered in greater dimensions with sugar than it will be with cocaine.
This dovetails perfectly. I was kind of, when Kevin told me you're on, I was kind of researching everything I can, and one of the things I saw interesting that you started tackling last month and this month is even the USDA, which is kind of publishes all these dietary guidelines, you talk about having two different mandates. One, it's supposed to actually, I did, of course. Like, I got
Steve,
it. I'm
so flattered. Thank you so much. Yeah. What Steve is
I'm
talking
the chubby
about
guy in the conversation. That's why I've been really quiet, because I've been taking notes this entire time. That's what Kevin knows I'm obese, and I admit to that, but like I said, and I see where you're coming from. That's why I've wanted to learn so much about you since Kevin talked about you, because I've done all those things. I've done the exercise. I've done the Atkins, and I know what you're saying is true. My point is I need to get from you information later on down the line how to deal with the boredom of what happens once you've done that for a while.
Every one of these topics and questions, I'm still back on the stigma thing because I have something I wanted to say about that. But
don't worry, we'll have you back on, Johnny.
And now you
don't
mentioned
worry.
The USDA.
We'll have you back on.
So there's so many. Let me first address, since you just brought that up. The thing Steve's talking about is I did a two-part article online, I think it's still online, at Whole Foods Online, on the new dietary guidelines. And in that, I pointed out, as I have to anyone who will listen, that the problem with the guidelines is not just what's in them. It's that why are we listening to them in the first place? Why are we going to the government for guidance on food? And when people are scratching their heads and going, well, why shouldn't I go to the government? I mean, don't they have our best interests? So the thing that I mentioned in there is that, yeah, sure, they have our best interests at heart. The USDA has two mandates. This is in its charter. It was started in 1853. You can look this up. You can read the charter on Wikipedia. The two mandates of the USDA is, number one, give the citizenry good information about healthy eating. Yes, absolutely, that's what they want to do. But their second mandate is to protect and promote the U.S. agricultural industry. And the five biggest crops in America, four of them are edibles. They're wheat, they're sugar, they're corn, and they're soy. They're the exact foods that are making us fat, sick, tired, and depressed, and diabetic. So how can, why are we going to this? This is like going to Philip Morris for information about smoking. I mean, what do you think you're going to hear
exactly.
from the government agencies? You know,
yeah.
it literally is like putting Marlboro in charge of the guidelines on smoking.
As one of the persons on the Atkins, like you said, it just seems, like you said, the science is so weird because they talk about all the cholesterol. I'm of a certain age where they talked about you only could have 2 or 3 eggs a week and blah, 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 blah. Well, eggs and cheese are my favorite thing, so I go on the Atkins diet, and I literally have about a dozen to two dozen eggs a week, and my cholesterol is the lowest it's ever been. I've been back on the Atkins now since January, and it's just the science is so weird.
We hear this all the time. And look, let's be clear, because I take this position of being able to have a microphone on these issues very seriously. Please don't anyone take this as medical advice. Every case is different. But I urge you to look into some of the research that I've looked into or read some of the conclusions we've had in our great cholesterol myth about how fat does not make you fat and does not give you heart disease. Now, that doesn't mean all fat is good for you. It doesn't mean all food is good for you. And I think I can pull this into stigma in a moment. This is part of our tendency to think in 140 characters, as if our brains are Twitter feeds. I mean, this is good, this is bad, fat's good, fat's bad, butter's good. And there's really a much greater contextualization that's needed. We need to be able to deal with some nuance. And it's the same kind of thinking that people in categories, oh, you did this, you're a this. You did this, you're a that. And it's these 140 characters kind of definitions of whether they be food or people or behavior, that's kind of part of the problem, that we need to have these kind of gradations and shadings. For example, in our book Smart Fat, we explain whether fat is bad for you or not. There are fats that are really bad for you, and there are fats that are really good for you, and it has nothing to do with whether it's saturated or not. So all this crap we've been hearing about saturated fat is bad, vegetable fat is good, it's just wrong. It doesn't mean that there aren't great, degree. For example, saturated fat that comes from, you had asked about this earlier, Kevin, about the quality of meat. Saturated fat that comes from animal products, when animals are raised on factory farms, they're kept in tiny little pins. They're fed grain, which isn't their natural diet. The grain is sprayed. It's not organic. It's sprayed with every chemical you can imagine, all of which gets into the fat of the cows. They then feed antibiotics to fatten them up and also to keep them from getting sick because of the grain that they're eating that makes their stomach acid. Then they're fed steroids and bovine growth hormone. Of course their fat is toxic, but it's not because it's saturated. It's because they were raised on a factory farm. Now, contrary to that, you take an Australian grass-fed beef where they roam around on pasture, and they nibble in the grass, and they pick up some insects and some worms, and their fat has lots of omega-3s, and they've never been fed an antibiotic in their life. The fat from that's a health food. So it's not whether it's saturated or not. And that's the kind of thinking that we really have to break through, and it's kind of the same thing in the way we think about people.
And I gotta just put cards on the table here. My wife is allergic to soy, and this was something that has come out.
Very common allergen.
But it has caused me to read. Now I always say this. I'm gonna live longer because I know Johnny and because of my wife's allergies. Because I've now considered literally so many things I just never considered before. And then, as I said before, I was living outside of America. Then I came back. And the other thing I saw along with this was servings, because I've never been able to adapt to this. But the one thing I'm going to say, I'm going all over the place. I'm going to thank the poverty of my Irish mother I grew up with the only dessert that I could have would be maybe a half a teaspoon of really natural sugar on Kellogg's cornflakes, and that was it. And so, nowadays I can taste when there's too much. So I get what you're saying, Johnny. My comfort food kind of goes back to, I guess, a very, very strict diet. But I'm so thankful for these two things, which is I do think of what is in my food, not just what my food is. And I guess where it came from or how far it's traveled to get to that plate or whatever. And I don't. And I'm not speaking from, a rich person's perspective here. As I said, I live by the books. I look at what's in there. I look at the ingredients. But it is an ongoing challenge. And I do find sometimes that it's not easy to find. And foods are, it's almost like they're trying to hide what's in them. I literally have to have a conversation sometimes.
Kevin, my dear friend. Kevin, it's not almost. That's exactly what they're trying to do. If you look at the labels, if you look at the nutritional ingredients, you will see a very good, cool trick that the food companies use. They are required by law to list their ingredients in order of percentage. So the thing that's, you know, if it's it's like if it's 40% milk, the milk's got to be the first ingredient, and then it goes down from there. Well,
yeah.
The food manufacturers finally kind of figured out that people were hip to, like, sugar as being the new fat. Sugar is the real culprit here, and so people are starting to look at labels looking for sugar. So manufacturers start using small amounts of about 15 different kinds of other sugars that the public doesn't recognize as sugar, like dextrose and maltol.
Yeah.
And so what you'll see is they're all listed at the bottom. They're all like, this one is 2%, this is, but you add them up together, and and sugar is the first ingredient. But they hide that from you by using, you know, rice bran syrup and brown rice. That sounds healthy. Brown rice syrup. They're all sugar. And you'll see 15 or 20 different names for them. That's how they hide that up. It's not an almost. It's very deliberate.
I've been going through all your books here, Johnny. So, and I've been doing this Atkins. I started the Atkins back in January. I've been through pretty much most of February, and this month I'm kind of trying to find different things because my problem is I get bored for it. So one of the first things that kind of jumped out at me in your books is living low carb. It's been expanded in 100,000 print, and talk about how do you actually live with that? Because I get bored with it. I love the food. Thank God, I love, like I said, meat. I love cheese. I love eggs, but then I get bored.
All right. Well, now, first of all, I don't want to say, without trashing the Atkins diet, which I was a big promoter of and still think, you know, has a lot of great things about it, our program Smart Fat actually addresses some of the challenges you had with Atkins. So what we do in Smart Fat is, well, there's a couple things. Number one, my co-author, Dr. Stephen Masley, who's the star of PBS, he's got the number one health special on PBS. You can see him all over the country in any PBS station. Dr. Masley was a trained chef. He actually took a year during medical school and did like a second job and trained at the Four Seasons for a year. So he's really into flavor, and he's really into making food delicious with spices, which, by the way, are like nature's medicine cabinet. That's the other thing about spices. Not only do they make the food taste good, but these are the most anti-inflammatory, antioxidant compounds you can imagine. So in Smart Fat, we actually kind of, I think, take Atkins to like a 3.0. So we say, okay, that was a really great introduction to the effect that fat and other types of foods have on our hormones. But now let's, you know, get down into and dig a little bit deeper. Not all of these fats are created equal. Some of them actually have proven health benefits, like olive oil, for example, or avocados. Some of them turned out to be neutral, like the saturated fat in meat. It may not save you from whatever, but it isn't going to hurt you one drop. It's neutral. And then there are some that are like coconut oil, Malaysian palm oil. These are wonderful, wonderful fats. And so we talk about, you know, what the great fats are, the smart fats, what are the neutral fats, and what are the really bad ones. And we make those distinctions. In addition, unlike Atkins, we actually do allow a lot of carbohydrates. We just don't allow a lot of junk. So you all have tons of beans, tons of legumes, all, you know, dusted up with all these spices and recipes, plenty of fat, certain fruits, berries, apples, grapefruits, cherries, all of these things are very low in sugar. The thing we don't encourage is lots of pasta and cereal and rice and potatoes. I mean, that's the stuff. Those are the processed carbs that raise your blood sugar just as sure as if you swallow the Domino sugar thing that's left out on the diner for the coffee. I mean, it has the same effect on your body. So I think we addressed, Scott, what you're kind of talking about, which is the boredom that comes from, you know, a very monotonous kind of diet. But I would actually take that one step further, if you don't mind. When I talk to audiences about this, because for me, nutrition is just a portal into mastery of your life. You know, you work in this one area, this is, you know, if you can get some mastery in this, you can gain some strength and some empowerment that you can put into effect in other areas of your life. So it's really, to me, it's really about transforming your life, not just about what's on your plate. And what I would often argue to, or what the case I would make would be, we feel deprived when we don't eat this crap, because there aren't a lot of other sources of pleasure in our life. And I realized this because I have a stepson who was addicted to marijuana. And out here in California, it ain't that hard to be. And, you know, a lot of people say, you can't get addicted. 10% of people can get addicted to it, and he was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, what's the most effective way to talk to this kid about marijuana? And I told him all the bad stuff, and I thought about it. But that made him feel good. And when I looked at his life, I said, there's nothing else in his life that does make him feel good. He's got no other pleasures to substitute for it. You know, we know with addiction that the pleasure centers of the brain are hijacked. they're hijacked by the substance, so that it's very difficult to get the normal amount of joy and pleasure and nourishment from everyday activities. That's one of the big dangers of addiction. So I would argue that one of the pathways to not being so bored with the food is to not make food the main source of pleasure in your life. I mean, if you're going out and you're meeting girls or boys or whatever you're into, and you're having a wonderful social life and a great sex life, and you're active and you're doing, are you really going to be deprived if you don't eat the Krispy Kreme? So I would argue that the second part of how do you change your diet is how do you get more pleasure in your life? So this isn't the big deal if you have to give up that Krispy Kreme. You see what I'm saying, Scott?
Gotcha.
And I don't mean
I like
just
that.
You.
I
don't just mean you. I'm talking about, I mean, believe me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But, you know, can I jump in for a second here? Because there's another
sure.
side to that, too, Johnny, which is, you know, I just read this a little while ago, and I am just floored by this. But I'm pretty sure I'm right. There are only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceuticals to advertise medication during primetime television. And
yeah,
it's the United States and I think New Zealand. Now, I'm not knocking the fact that we need, you know, good medicine in our lives, but imagine, and this is the thing that I just say, I have actually sat down and read these books, and I think about what I eat, and I think about my food, because it's important for both myself and my wife's health. And her allergies, as well as my friendship with Johnny, came to my life at the right time to make me pay attention to what was going on my plate. But to treat it in a way that is, you know, here's this. Imagine if you just took, instead of all those primetime commercials, learning about talk to your doctor, talk to your doctor, talk to your doctor, talk to your doctor, about listening and finding out actually what is going on your plate. And as you said, it's kind of like a rigged system where they don't want you to. But literally, by doing that, the information is like the thing I want to just say is I also say, as well as your blog, Johnny, I encourage our listeners to look at your videos on your website. I know we'll talk about it, but this Smart Fat, I'm fascinated by it. I'm just starting the book and it is so. It's just fascinating. So the videos are there for our audience that might not know where to begin. I would love beforehand just where you would anyone who's just now beginning to hear this say, you know what, I want to just begin this battle, because I find sometimes due to depression, it is hard to make that first step away from addiction, and we might not even treat food like an addiction, and yet it could be something that we're addicted to.
It frequently is, and I include myself in that too. I mean, we're not immune to the very clever manipulations of taste, so that these things just become they create their own cravings. You know, and I've
but that's
what
I got to say. Your recipes are brilliant. Your recipes are brilliant. The taste isn't lacking. So that's a fiction. That's one of those dissonances or whatever that you're talking about there, because I don't miss taste at all. I enjoy the flavor of my food. So again, I'm not in perfect health, and I'm not saying I'm the perfect example of it, but I will say this: when we get done with this, Scott, we're going to talk more about all of this health stuff, because I want my co-host to be in great health as well.
We're going to make you the
I'll be the spokesperson. I'll tell you, I'm going to get the book and I'm going to let you measure me for the next year. And we'll see what happens, because
I'm seriously
want to get this.
Now,
I've already read half your articles. You don't know how much I've been looking for bulletproof coffee. I'm waiting for it to come in the mail. I've already ordered some. I've already ordered that.
Thank you. Very, very kind.
Great.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, Kevin, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And you were talking about when you were talking about stigma, and when I was talking about stress, I mentioned how serious the repercussions of having those hormones elevated all the time can be, and what it actually does to your body. I want to talk also about how stressful and inflammatory even toxic thoughts can be. And when someone buys their own stigma, it literally can change their behavior and their physiology, and I want to give you an example of that. There have been a number of studies. The psychology literature is filled with this. They'll take, let's say a couple of ethnic groups, Asian students, Black students, and they do an experiment where they kind of know what the baseline is of how people would do on a test. They have very good baseline studies on that, right? And now they introduce one factor. In one of the groups, they will actually show a little video that confirms some cultural stereotype. So, for example, the Asian students will be seeing some kind of thing that says, yo, they're all great in math, they're so smart, right? Maybe there'll be some similar...
This year's Oscars. No, I'm sorry. This year's Oscars.
Very good. But they will show this thing and kind of prime the brain to remember that stereotype. And guess what happens? Those kids actually perform differently in the test. The Asian kids that saw the film that reinforces the stereotype that they're all so smart in math actually do better. The women that see something that says, oh, women should be subservient and never do better than men, do worse. The blacks that have been told, you know, oh, you're not good at English, do worse on English. And when they're told, oh, you come from a group that is really gifted within the field of English, they will do better. And so translate this to when we believe the crap we're told about ourselves.
Yeah.
Translate that to someone who's walking around thinking they're a freak or thinking that they have nothing to offer society. How do you think that's going to affect their behavior, and how do you think that behavior is going to affect their physiology? And that's what I'm interested in, how the mind and the body work together like that, because there's no more body versus mind. There's no more nature versus nurture. We all understand now that these things affect one another. It is one big fluid thing. Your environment creates your genes create your environment. They talk to each other. They affect each other. There's an entire science called epigenetics talking about how environmental things can actually affect your genes and the genes that you pass on to other people. So it's very, very filled with you know, exciting data that actually can be used to empower people and really have a reason to change how they think about their own place in the world.
One of the things that got me excited to have you on when Kevin first told me about you is, I researched everything, and the quote you said is just brought me everything. It says, beauty and health come in all shapes and sizes. Just be the best version of yourself that you can be every day. And that's really something we can attain to. We can do our best for ourselves. It doesn't have to be what's best for everybody else. Like I said, all of us are different. Everything, food affects all of us in different ways. But if we do what's best for us and take the time to learn what's best for us, then that's you. I mean, that's like you said, beauty and health come in all shapes and sizes, but do what's best for you.
Yeah, I Scott, thank you for bringing that up, because I was asked once, you know, what's a mission statement you want to be on your website? And I thought about it, and that's the one that came to mind, because I honestly, I believe that. And I am can I share a personal, my next birthday I will be 70. And one of the
unbelievable.
You don't know how I look. I look 100.
I am so proud of you, and you look. This guy, I see this every time. I can't wait the next time I see him. But this guy has more energy than I did when I was in my 30s, it's just amazing. And I still literally, you are one of the most energetic and naturally so people I know. Go ahead, Johnny.
Well, thank you. But I, like everybody else in my 20s, was trapped by the media messages about what's attractive. So, you know, washboard stomachs on guys and, you know, beautiful and not a drop of cellulite on girls, and you should be able to bounce a quarter off people's butts. And, you know, I, too, was victimized. It's a very wrong word. I didn't mean that. But I, too, was kind of seduced by that, and I think many people are. One of the greatest gifts of wisdom, if you can call it wisdom, or growth, if you can call it, I'm not sure what label to put on it, but I have become, as the decades have gone on, liberated from that. And I have learned very willingly, and I didn't have to work at it, it just happened, to appreciate sexuality and attractiveness and juiciness in all of a sudden. In people who would be considered 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds overweight, people who would be considered funny looking, people who would be considered too old. And all of a sudden you start to respond to different qualities and you go, holy mackerel, sexiness and beauty and vitality and inspiration comes in every size. It just does. And it's not like we shouldn't try to be a better version and lose some fat. We're going to get a lot of health benefits to that. We should all do that and stay in shape and exercise and do all those good things. But if we don't get the six-pack, if we don't look like the latest heroin-addicted model on the cover of Vogue, it's not a tragedy, because I'm telling you, if we could get to believe in those qualities in ourselves and know that they can shine through and know that you can have many of the things you think you could only have if you had the perfect body, if we could get that message across, man, we would be golden.
You see why he's got to come on again, Scott?
I'm telling you, absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you, guys. It's Dave. This has been a real. Has it been an hour? Holy moly! Yeah, that's great.
Oh,
believe it or not, yes, I'm usually the keeper of the time, but like I said, I've been taking so many notes, I haven't paid attention like usual. So yeah, we're an hour time, but it's like, wait a second, I got to hear this. I got to write this down. What book was that? And I've been studying the entire time while I've been doing this.
Well, I can be the regular. I can be like your Sanjay Gupta on CNN. You know, I'll be the guy that shows up and talks about health stuff. If you want. I'll be your regular
correspondent
from Woodland Hills, California. Okay.
I just want you to be Johnny. I just want you to be Johnny Bowden, my friend Johnny Bowden, the most informed person I know when it comes to what I eat every day. I run it by Johnny. It's true.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to give one piece of nutrition advice, if I may.
Yeah.
If anybody has sat through this entire interview, I think they should. First of all, thank you. And let me leave you with one basic, you know, people say, well, what should I start with? Well, there's so many things.
Yeah.
There's so many. Here's the
yeah, thing. That was my question.
Okay,
good.
Very simple. I call it the Johnny Bowden four food groups. You remember anybody old enough to remember the four food groups? That was before
four food groups.
It was milk, cheese, butter, and what I don't know, whatever the dairy industry was promoting at the time.
Yeah.
But this is the Johnny Bowden four food groups, the food you could, if you were naked on the savannah in Africa and you had a stick, a pointed stick, what would you eat and what could you catch? It's basically food you could hunt, fish, gather, or pluck. If you start with the concept that forget the percentage of protein, forget the percentage of fat, forget all the diets that, you know, dole it out with calories and percentages, real food, food your grandmother would have recognized as food. She doesn't know what a Lunchable is, okay? Nobody, all right?
Yeah.
Food that they would actually recognize as real food, food that would spoil if you left it out. If you stick with that, stuff that has a lot of colors and is real food that you could have hunted or fished, nuts, berries, fruits, vegetables, beans, you cannot go wrong with that. If you make that your template and you start there, all the rest is details.
I love that.
Absolute brilliance.
Thank you.
All right, well,
thank
our
you.
First steps for all of our guests is to go. The first step is to go to johnnybowden.com. That's JONNYBOWDEN.com to start reading all this Mendicus stuff. Second thing, pick up a copy of Smart Fat, which I'm going to do as soon as I possibly can here. And what is our third? What's the third option you have? What's the next best thing that they could do, Johnny?
Eat real food and believe in yourself. How about that?
Well, actually, Johnny, I want to say something else because, Johnny, you know this because I also do. I also speak now, and I'm also doing the Healing Stigma program as, you know, doing, you know, workshops. So I'd like to know also for other people out there that would like to know more about Johnny Bowden in person, Johnny Bowden services. Is that also on the same site or should they go elsewhere? Could you just talk to that for a second, Johnny?
Well, sure. No,
I've seen this guy in person.
I'm
He's
doing...
worth having. I've seen Johnny in person speak, and this is what we scratched the surface of tonight is only a little bit. So please, Johnny, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, anything that I'm doing will be either on my Dr. Johnny Bowden page on Facebook, or it will be I'll be talking about it on Twitter at Johnny Bowden, or on my website. So all of that will be there. I will tell you that I'm going to be speaking live in Portland in April. I don't know, a lot of people are probably listening to this evergreen, so it will be long gone, but maybe some people will hear it before then. And I also am hosting in the later part of this year a summit on fat loss, and it's called The Truth About Fat Loss, and I will give you a link to where you can listen to all of that for free between April 25th and May 2nd, and then you want to, if anybody wants to buy the full set of 37 interviews, I think it's available for a very reasonable price, but you will hear 37 of the smartest people in the country talking about every aspect of metabolism and fat loss and the microbiome and gluten sensitivity and the most effective form of exercise, and it's a work I'm really proud of. I did some really great interviews with some really smart people, and I'd love to share that. And it goes to the heart of what we talked about earlier about don't, you know, if you meet the guru on the road, here are 37 people. They don't all think the same way, but you're bound, if you listen to these, to find one or two that you really relate to. I like this guy's message. I like what she's saying. And you take that information, and with that, you can build your own health team and your own health protocol.
We'll definitely co-promote, Johnny. You'll send me that stuff, and I will definitely feature that. Excellent.
Thank you. Scott, great to meet you. Kevin, as always.
It was my pleasure, Johnny. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Stay smart. Bye-bye.
That was a great interview, huh?
I told you. This is absolutely a pleasure, and that's why I had to get him on here. And what a great month to have him on with everything that we heard earlier. It was a pleasure.
Now, I had to be, there had to be something wrong with my phone. He said he was 70 years old?
70. He's going to be 70 this year. Yeah, and his picture
is
coming.
Unbelievable.
That's not an old photo. He is absolutely one of the, and he's naturally that way. He really is. He's gone through a lot. You know, we'll have to have him back on again and talk more about that journey. But yeah, he's naturally that way. But he challenges it. The idea that he's the nutrition mythbuster is absolutely truthful. He thinks about it, and like I said, he was the one that solved when I got back here that I wasn't eating the right meat, and that's what was causing this whole difference in why I was feeling so lethargic when I first moved back to America.
Wow, he's just amazing. I'm so glad we were able to have him on.
Yeah.
Well, what's
happening
to Healing Stigma? Didn't I hear that you had a seminar possibly happening sometime soon, right?
Yes, we're going to be having seminars, the workshops, and actually I think it's also one of these things that, thank you to you, Scott, I think the radio show is getting a lot more listeners, the peer-to-peer support group, every part of the services are really going well. So again, at www.healingstigma.com, people can find out more, and I love being busy helping people find ways to break down stigma. So, you know, please reach out and we'll get in touch with you as soon as possible. We're busy, but we're not too busy for anyone who wants to challenge stigma.
Well, I definitely recommend they reach out to you because it's just such a fantastic program. I've been honored to get to learn a little bit about it from you. We've been having this is a great fourth show, I'm telling you. We're just having a great time. 1 month down.
Yeah. I know. It's unbelievable. It really is. And I mean, we know a lot of the guests that are coming up are so excited, and it's just, it keeps growing all the time. So we must be doing something right.
We got our fingers on the pulse, my friend. That's definitely true. Well, I hope anybody that's listening, if you've missed any of our shows, please go to our website. That's www.healingstigmaradio.com. You can see our past episodes on there. We have Rachel Griffin. We have Rob Watson, we have Paul Richmond, just a couple of fantastic interviews, and now we're going to have the wonderful Dr. Johnny Bowden on. This is just so exciting for me.
I know, think of it, Broadway to nutrition in 1 month.
Exactly, running the gamut. We definitely have run that gamut. All righty, well, that's going to have to do it for us. I can't believe I've let us go so far over. Kevin, it was a fantastic show today. Please be sure to tune in next week when our special guest will be recording artist Jay Knight. He's been working the Say No to Bullying with the Stand for the Silent campaign and actually even giving proceeds from his anti-bullying song, Kill Me Now. So we're going to have another great show next week right here on Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. We look forward to seeing you and hearing you then. Please join us in our chat room. You can always jump into the chat. That's at www.blogtalkradio.com/leftofstraight. You'll see the chat down the bottom there, or just follow the link we'll have on social media. We're going to finish up tonight with our good friend Blake MacGyver's song, Start to Believe. This is Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. You guys have a great week.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for, you give me all that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces, maybe I'll start to believe. Up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies, cause now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need, and baby, you gather the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. My doubts close in, I know that you'll be there. I won't despair, my dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. Maybe I'll start to believe. I guess I'll start to believe. I guess I'll start to believe.